Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Peter King will jump on board a day earlier than usual. I'm heading to New York tonight. I'll be in New York on assignment for a cool thing that we'll talk about when we get back. So Peter said he'll come on with me a day earlier. I'm hoping to hook up with him, actually, when we get to New York. Peter King at about 10:20 will talk about what's going on with the Cardinals chasing Carolina. Peter had a really interesting note in his column today in the Monday Morning Quarterback about a conversation he had with Larry Fitzgerald recently and Fitz's future that I think you're going to want to hear about. We'll talk about that. And Cam Newton's MVP. You know, I see Carolina blow through teams, but they're blowing through Atlanta. Atlanta's not good. They struggled with New Orleans. I'm probably going to start sounding like the hometown guy here, but I try to look at this stuff very neutrally. And I don't know. I think the Cardinals in Carolina, even if the game's in Carolina, I still give the Cardinals a really good shot at winning. Yeah, the Panthers have some fine players. Luke Kuechly is very good. Does Cam Newton deserve to be an MVP when he's chucking a football against the Saints, which is one of the worst defenses out there? So I want to talk to Peter about that because I don't think the South's very good. Now, you could say, well, the 49ers aren't very good. Yeah, you're right, but they're not as bad as some of the teams that are in that division, in my view. And the same with St. Louis, and Seattle's better than probably all those teams outside of Carolina. And quite frankly, Seattle is doing what Seattle always does. And that is late in the season, let's get our act together and let's get hot at the right time. And we clearly want to be that team that nobody wants to play. And that's what they're all about. So I'm not all that enamored with Carolina. It's pretty simple during the regular season. And when you're in a bad division, the schedule breaks right. Don't get me wrong. What they did on Thanksgiving Day was impressive, but the team they played's horrible. Horrible. Cowboys are just awful. They're a speed bump this year. They're dreadful. So we'll talk to Peter about all things around the NFL. Looking forward to that. Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. My friend on, we'll do some Cardinal stuff with Paula, but also Zach Greinke coming on board. Eric and I were at the Zach Greinke press conference on Friday and the big buzz around the Diamondbacks now and some other things going on here locally. We'll talk with Paula Bovin, News and Notes. This is really like the calm before the storm, I think. We have all these bowl games that are going to roll through the valley. And I actually think that there's some interest in ASU playing at home this year. I think that they're going to do all right on attendance. I was at a couple Christmas events, and people were actually saying, I'm looking forward to seeing the Sun Devils play. Like the bitter taste of what happened this just dreadful season is behind them, and they want to see them in a bowl game. That's all going to start here next week. So this is kind of the calm before the storm. I'm very hopeful this is the week that we no longer see Markieff Morris in a Phoenix Suns uniform. I think this could be the week. Very hopeful that that is the case. Just enough. Had the big fat DNP against his name last night or yesterday afternoon. Eric, have you had a DNP before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've had some DNPs.
DNPs is like do not participate.
Did not play.
Did not play is what
I've had some did not plays when I played high school basketball, and I've had some DNPs
here.
You've
had lots of DNPs.
I wouldn't say a lot. I've had a few.
Did not play. Jared Nilsen
handful.
Has had some DNPs.
Yep. Yep. You haven't had any DNPs though. You just keep telling yourself that.
I just keep telling myself that every day. What'd you make out of Greinke? Because the Cardinals already played, so you know we'll get into Philly and all that.
What I think about Greinke.
Yeah.
You won't be seeing him on the SportsCenter Sunday night conversation. He will not be appearing PTI. He will not be out and about. He will not be he will be the face. He may not be the voice, and that's totally fine. He does not like the spotlight. He does not feel comfortable on the stage, and he said that in so many words on Friday at the press conference.
I didn't think he was that bad.
I came across pretty impressed. He was funny, had a dry sense of humor.
Dry sense of humor, it's fine.
You could just tell that is not his thing. He is not Dave McGinnis. He does not love the media. He does not love the microphones.
It's not fair. He's not red light Kurt.
No.
Nobody loves, I mean, just because some guy doesn't like to talk openly, I'm fine with that. You know, when people try to get him to open up about signing a big contract, he's not going to say anything. So don't even go there. You're wasting your time.
What's your favorite part of being in Arizona? The sunsets. Like, he did have some pretty interesting comments.
Yeah.
Different.
Look, he's not here to wow us. Uh-uh. He's here to wow fans, and we're merely here to critique how he plays. I thought that, look, if you're a fan of sports, okay, I know everybody's all wound up about the pro football team right now, and that's fine, and they should be. But it's going to be amplified when you have a baseball team that's in a pennant race, and you're not playing every 7 days, you're playing every day. And when you have a team that won almost 81 games last season, they had a guy that could win 20. Now, I'm not going to say with his eyes closed, because that's disrespecting the game. When you have a guy that can win 20, and we haven't had one of those in a long, long time here in Arizona to cover and to observe, you can't help but to start looking at the team saying, you know, I could see a 90-win team out of this ball club. And that August and September and October are going to be very meaningful. It's pretty cool when you see cities like Kansas City, that the Chiefs were supposed to be really good this year, and they've been up and down. And the Royals are working it and getting it done. I remember talking to a few friends up in Denver when the Avalanche were good and the Broncos were good and the Nuggets were relevant, and they were all working together. Unfortunately, we've only had one team here recently that's done anything. And I think that's going to change. Well, I know that's going to change now with the baseball team.
And congrats to the pro teams for the Minnesota sweep over the weekend. The Coyotes beat the Wild.
Got it done, huh?
The Suns beat the Timberwolves. And, of course, the Cardinals defeated the Vikings. So, well done.
Yeah. On the Cardinals front, so this bye, mini bye that they've talked about, I saw Steve Keim yesterday. And I try very hard when I see him in a public setting to not talk football with him. We're at the same church. And so we're just visiting briefly just on stuff. And I just said, hey, this is really cool to see where you are and where you've been and that road less traveled. And that's all. It was good. I think that even he and the rest of the organization needed a few days off, because we can sit here behind microphones and we can talk about how, well, they should beat this team. This team isn't this. This team isn't that. And they've gone about their business, but it drains you. I think you could even see that in the game against the Vikings. From my view is they barely hung on in certain areas. They did not play a complete game from start to finish. And so they're going to go to Philadelphia this week. And Philadelphia is going to be a desperate team. The Cardinals are in a spot where it's like Carolina. Carolina just keeps winning. And you get to a point where if you're Carolina, do you start resting your regulars and lose your edge? Remember when the Cardinals played the Steelers earlier this season? When they played the Steelers, they had some time off. And they didn't play well. Did not play well at all coming off with the way their schedule laid out. So you would like to see the edge continue. And you could go through each and every player. Me, all I care about is some of these guys get healthy at this point. Get Frosty Rucker back out on the field. Get more of a rotation up front. We can sit here and we can admire a spin move sack over and over that gives a player $200,000. But you're not going to win with just a player on the defensive front. You know, so what Dwight Freeney did was great. He's come in here late. He's gotten off the couch and has given them something. But I'm not going to sit here and jump up and down about it. I'm just not. That's disrespectful to all the guys that are alongside of him. He made a hell of a football play. He did. And that's what he's been brought here to do, by the way, is to make plays like that. Let's not forget this. It's not like, oh my gosh, can you believe that? That's what he's supposed to do. And he had several quarterback pressures. It wasn't like his numbers were bad at his recent stops. He was on some bad teams. So for them to win and win big, you have to get more of a push up front, from my view. You were there on Thursday night. You and I didn't talk on Friday. Am I hitting the mark here?
You're right on. You're right on the
would
money.
You'd tell me if I weren't, though.
I would. Yeah, I have this little button that allows me to go on the air whenever I want.
Yeah, so. You can. Just chew me up and spit me out.
It's exciting time, though. I mean, the Cardinals, three games left, and a lot to play for, even though it does look like Carolina is in the driver's seat for that.
They're in the driver's seat, but I look at their division and say, man, the Saints are horrible.
They are horrible. And the Saints had, I mean, the Saints had their chances to beat Carolina a couple weeks ago, yeah, and that went by the wayside.
So. That and, you know, Atlanta.
Complete free fall, the Falcons. Remember, yeah, remember like halfway through the season when everyone's like, wow, look at this Falcons team? And
I wouldn't want Matt Ryan on my team right now.
Fabiano said he doesn't even deserve to be on fantasy rosters, which is crazy to think about this time of year.
Yeah. So, and look, you look over at the NFC West, and St. Louis is all beat up. Okay. Yeah, they've got some issues. And you get to a point with Jeff Fisher where you say, you know, you're a really good coach. I like him a lot. They've had all these high draft picks, and they still haven't been able to push it through because they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, I think the end is coming for Fisher.
Yeah, and then the 49ers, you know, they're not good at all in any way, shape, or form, but they've got some guys on that team that are veteran guys. Joe Staley's not going to quit. Anquan Boldin's not going to quit. They may not be happy with their situation. I don't know. I feel like Carolina, while they're rolling through people, and I'd like to see a team go undefeated. I really would. It's cool. I remember the 72 Dolphins. And it would be great for fans to see a team like Carolina. I'm not sure I'm big on Cam Newton pulling the whole team around while the game's still going on to take selfies and all that stuff. It's a new NFL, right? Peter King is next, the Monday Morning Quarterback with Sports Illustrated. He will join us to go through the Cardinals game with Philadelphia this coming week. We'll totally preview stuff with Peter. I don't want to get too much in revisionist history here. That's next with Peter King. Peter King joins us now for a couple of minutes, the Monday Morning Quarterback. Always good to catch up with Peter, SI.com, senior NFL writer, MMQB editor-in-chief. I'll get to the Cardinals at Philadelphia in a minute. You had something really interesting, among other interesting nuggets, about Larry Fitzgerald in your column this week and how he's chasing Jerry Rice. I saw Jerry Rice a couple of weeks ago up in Las Vegas at an event. He looks like he could still play to this day. But your conversation with Fitz, could you get a sense of, does he have the Jerry Rice catches on his radar screen, Peter, or do you think he walks away from the game without giving it a run?
What a great question that is, Brad. I get the strong, or I don't get a strong feeling at all, but I get the feeling that that this is something that I think Larry Fitzgerald would like to do, which is to chase Jerry Rice, but I think he believes that several of the years in his absolute prime, while not being wasted, you know, he spent with people that, you know, with quarterbacks that, and this is the great thing about Larry, and people who have listened to me talk about Larry Fitzgerald basically are probably sick of it, because I think he is just a tremendous guy. I've given him every opportunity over the years to say, well, what do you want? I'm not going to catch Larry Fitzgerald. I play with John Skelton, or I play, you know, whatever. And look, this is not any, it isn't really a criticism of John Skelton so much as it to say, that if you look at what Jerry Rice did in his career, he went from MVP Joe Montana to MVP Steve Young to Pro Bowler Jeff Garcia for 2 years to another MVP Rich Gannon for 3 years in Oakland with John Gruden, and John Gruden threw it, you know, more than Mike Holmgren and Mike Shanahan in the West Coast offense, and then Bill Walsh in San Francisco. So, and his last year, he played with Matt Hasselbeck in Seattle. You know, and Hasselbeck has made 4 Pro Bowls and playing for Holmgren. So you're talking about a perfect way to catch 1,549 balls, plus a guy who really got to be late in his career, a guy who wanted to extend that record as far out into the future as he possibly could. And I'm not sure that that's what makes Larry Fitzgerald.
I think we lost Peter.
Excited about waking up in the morning.
Who knows?
But Larry would probably have to play 6 more years, realistically, if you think about it. If you want to catch it by the end of this year, he'll have 520 catches to go. You figure probably, even if Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians are with the Cardinals fully healthy and coaching and everything for the next 5 years after this one, hard to imagine that in his mid to late 30s, he's going to average 100 some catches a year. So it's probably a 6-year thing. Just my gut feeling. I don't think it'll happen, but like I wrote, I think if anybody could do it, it's him, because look at him now, Brad.
Yep.
I mean, do you ever see this guy limping? Do you ever see him asking out of the game? It's like he's Gumby. He's really an amazing player with an amazing capacity to get hit, get up, and get back and play the next week. So I fairly marvel at him.
I had his dad on last week, and the senior said he thinks 3 more years, easy, he could play, but it's Larry's decision. And, you go through those years, you mentioned just one quarterback in John Skelton, and when it was Leinart, and it was Derek Anderson, and it was Kevin Cobb, and it was Max Hall, we all sat up in the press box, those of us that have been here longer than a few weeks in Arizona, because we're so transitory, and said, man, there's some years that are going by the wayside with him. And he did not pout, at least publicly. And now he's turned himself into one of the better blocking wide receivers. I'm sure you saw the layout hit he had on the touchdown the other night against the Vikings. And he's really, Peter, turned himself into somebody that is refusing to say, I'm going to reach a limit. I keep pushing higher and higher. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm not in that room. You are. But in my view, no matter what, if he walked away today, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Well, that's the problem with, and I've been in that room for over 20 years. So there's some things that, let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
I cannot predict what makes anybody vote for anybody on that committee. Okay. But the fact is that some very, very good receivers have waited a while to get in. And we struggle as a group of 46 people with what makes a Hall of Fame receiver. And we also struggle with, how long it takes somebody to get in. So whenever anybody says, do you think such and such is a first ballot Hall of Famer? I always ask this question.
Yeah.
Well, who's he up against?
Mm-hmm.
Because we all walk in that room when we vote, at least I do. And I said, okay, we have 15 modern era finalists to consider today. Who are the best 5? Because that's who gets in. And so when people at the end of some voting process, I remember I got this question one year. I was really surprised that Aeneas Williams got in. Just surprised because I didn't think you can tell year to year whether a guy has traction going from, hey, was he somebody who people really liked a year ago? What do you think? And so if your first year of eligibility, you're up against, and I'm making this up, Brett Favre and
Peyton Manning
and
sure,
Barry Sanders and whoever. Yeah. Yeah, and Peyton Manning, whatever. It's going to be very, very hard to get in because there are some guys who, and this is the way I put it, there are some guys who jump the line. Okay. There are some guys who are not going to have to say, well, let's just see. Like, for instance, one of the guys this year who I really like and who I've liked for several years, I think Kevin Green belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he hasn't gotten in. And I get the sense from the sentiment in the room that he's very close. And so I think he's going to get in at some point, and some point very soon. But I don't know if he's going to get in this year. And so that's why I don't know if Larry would get in the first year. I think he'd probably get in if he never played another snap. But the way that you take that part out of it is you say, okay, I'm going to catch more balls than any receiver has ever played other than Jerry Rice or whatever. And then I think it makes your case a lot stronger.
Peter King with us, SI.com, senior NFL writer, the MMQB, great website, the website to go to across the National Football League. He joins us for a couple of minutes via Skype. Let's talk about Philadelphia. Eagles on Sunday night. Chip Kelly gets barbecued on a weekly basis. It feels like the Eagles 1 week have got it figured out. Then they take a couple steps backward. What are the Cardinals walking into at the Link on Sunday night?
Well, it's such an interesting story there. You know, Chip Kelly is seemingly a drama in himself every week. I think one of the things about him, Brad, is that when you play or coach in Philadelphia in any sport, and you are deemed to be for whatever reason a disappointment or having made a mistake, you are going to get fricasseed. And look, Chip Kelly has made his share of personnel mistakes and some coaching mistakes. Sam Bradford hasn't panned out yet, although the last 2 weeks he's showing that Chip Kelly, you know, Sam Bradford instead of Nick Foles, pretty smart decision. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things about Kelly is that he's really made his share of personnel errors. And so and rightfully so, they're 6-7. They're not the kind of team that is going to steamroll anybody. But let's talk about the Eagles as a team right now. The last 2 weeks, they've won at Foxborough, and they've beaten the Bills in what was a playoff game for the Bills at home. Both close games, but in my opinion, you know, both very deserved, justifiable wins. Here's the team you're going to see. You're going to see a team that isn't going to beat itself, and you're going to see a team that is getting more efficient in the passing game every week. And Jeff Lurie gave out T-shirts to his team this past week, the owner of the Eagles, 53 angry men. And they have done a really good job internally of creating an us-against-the-world environment. And there are some players, even though there are players on that team, who I think probably look at Chip Kelly and roll their eyes. You also have team players on that team who are very loyal to him, like center Jason Kelce, like Bradford. You have and important guys on this team. So this is a tough game for the Cardinals, without any question. I mean, I like Arizona. I've watched enough football this year to think that I like Arizona almost any week. Mm-hmm. But this is going to be a very, very tough game. And the Eagles are going to be better on defense, I think, than people in Arizona will think.
Peter, appreciate the time and the insight as always. Thanks.
All the best, Brad. Thank you.
There's Peter King with us for a couple of minutes every week. Peter jumps on board via Skype. Of course, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, senior NFL writer, MMQB editor-in-chief, Peter King with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Paula Bovin joins us on the other side. News and notes around the Arizona sports scene. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmat.
Good catching up with Paula Bovin. News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. A little programming tip. Thursday, Paula Bovin solo in this chair doing not only this show but the TV show. You're not going to screw up, are you?
I'm going to take over the show, Brad.
That's
maybe should be a little bit worried, frankly.
It's fine by me. It's fine by me. It is Paula Bovin doing Brad Sussmat Football AZ. She can call it Paula Bovin Football AZ for all I care on the television show on Thursday night. So good. I'm looking forward to seeing how that works out.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
What is in your wheelhouse today? I mean, I could throw Greinke at you first. I could throw the Cardinals at you first. But I think I know where you're going to go with the Cardinals, or maybe I don't know, or maybe it's something else. What's in your wheelhouse or across the state today?
Well, you know what? I mean, I'll be honest. It is Cardinals, and I'm actually off this week, and I'm not even writing, and I'm thinking about the Cardinals because, again, I was assaulted at Safeway this morning. Not assaulted.
Wow.
But there is a guy who works in the produce department who always wants to talk about the Cardinals, and now his thing is he's really freaked out and worried about the rest of the season, which I can kind of understand a little bit.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I was at a Christmas party last night, and most everybody there either wanted to talk about ASU or talk about the Cardinals and how they're worried that the Cardinals aren't going to have their act together. So clearly there is that gravitation. There was some Greinke, and I'll get to that in a minute. But
right.
I'm one of those that, and this is going to sound like the hometown broadcast guy, and I don't mean to be that. I don't think I am that. But the Cardinals are better than Carolina. Carolina's beating these brutal teams in the NFC South. You tell me, are the Saints any better than the Rams? I think the Rams are better than the Saints. If we're talking about the lower division part of their division. I think that you look at Carolina and they blow up Atlanta. Atlanta stinks. Okay, they're not any better than the Seattle Seahawks. Okay, so I guess I'm looking at this. If they have to go to Carolina, which it looks like they're gonna have to go to Carolina, if indeed they want to punch their ticket to the Super Bowl, I'm not worried about that. I don't think that's a big deal.
Oh, I don't know. I have to disagree with you a little bit, and this is not to, you know, talk negatively about anything the Cardinals have done, because they've done amazing this season. But the reality is that Carolina has won the games they were supposed to win. Even if the opponent isn't as good, I feel like in that regard they've done a better job than the Cardinals, because I felt like there's been a couple letdowns. Now, the way the Cardinals are playing now, I find it hard to believe they're going to lose to anybody during the rest of at least this regular season. And they have a tough one coming up in Philadelphia. But you got to hand it to Carolina for whatever and whoever their opponents were. They won the games they were supposed to win. And that says something about that team to me.
All right. So because we're in this digital age, I just pulled this up, okay? They beat the Jaguars. Jaguars are better. They beat the Texans. Texans are all beat up. They beat the Saints. They barely beat the Saints. They won at Tampa Bay, and that's when Tampa Bay was figuring it out. They did have a nice win at Seattle. Okay, I'm going to give them that. I'm not going to sit here and turn my nose up at them. But the Cowboys stink. They put 44 on the Redskins. The Redskins aren't any good. I don't care what their place is in the division. They put 41 up on the Saints, and the Saints put up 38 because they have Drew Brees. There's Carson Palmer out here. They shut out Atlanta. Atlanta's not any good. So I think, my friend, that I'm willing to take a stand here on this one, that I don't care if they have to go on the road. Now, does it mean that there's going to be torrential downpour because it's Carolina versus being here where you can control the elements? Yeah, that could be part of it. But I don't see this over. It's not like this 13-0 Panthers team strikes the fear of God in me like they're that much better. That's just
no,
me.
Nor, yeah, and they shouldn't. But the bottom line is the game, you know, if things are going as they are, is going to be there. That's just a tough environment no matter what you're playing on the road. And I think, but I understand too, Mr. Produce Clerk's nervousness, because you've got a game in Philadelphia, which is, you know, I watched them play and pull it out yesterday. And then they have two games home against Seattle and Green Bay. Who's their other game? I'm losing my mind now.
Yeah.
Cardinals. I mean, you know, none of those are pushover games. And I watched Seattle play yesterday, and they look pretty darn good. So I guess my point is, I understand the concern. As someone who's watched this team for a while, I also really believe in the Cardinals and the direction they're headed. But you just got to be careful. You just can't have a letdown.
I think you've got a calm there, Mr. Produce Guy, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
You got a calm there. He's stacking Brussels sprouts, and he wants to talk to me while he's going to get him bell peppers about the Cardinals. I think that you got something there.
Absolutely.
So let's switch from there over to Greinke. Greinke comes in, the press conference, he was fine. He's never going to wow anybody with how he talks. It wasn't bad. It was just, you know, that's not his deal. He has anxiety over it. And so I don't care about that stuff. All I care about is he's going to put a lot of people in the seats, a lot of people in front of television sets, and more importantly, he can give them 20 more wins than what they had last season. And last season was almost a 500 year with a bunch of kids pitching. So I really have to give Ken Kendrick a lot of pats on the back, because Ken's gotten a lot of foots in the butt for things that he's done through the years. But I think this one was very smart. Did you hear Greinke? What do you think?
I heard, you know, I wasn't there live, but I saw it on video. Yeah, I mean, I agree what you're saying. He didn't wow anybody, I think, with what he was saying. But that's not, we're not, you know, the city doesn't want a public relations guy. The city wants victories. And I really impressed with what the Diamondbacks done, because if you sit back and think about the amount of money they're paying him, I mean, that is unbelievable money in all of baseball. And you know, the reaction nationally has been like, wow, you know, they spent that much money. That's a serious commitment and a serious belief. And right now, what the Diamondbacks need more than anything, more than most teams, is as surefire, a player as you can get where you can count on. You don't want potential. You want somebody as close to a sure thing as you can find. And no, there's no sure things in baseball, but you've got to get as close as you can. And while there are other organizations that are all focused on building for the future and letting their draft picks work out and taking a chance on somebody, blah, 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 that's not where the Diamondbacks are as far as what they need to be to maintain a fan base and grow a fan base and to get some W's. So, you know, they had to do it if they wanted to be competitive, certainly in this NL West. And yeah. I applaud them. I applaud both moves. I know a lot of people hated the second move, but I applaud them both.
I'm right there with you. I think we're seeing in this day and age of, well, this prospect, this is old school baseball people, okay? I shouldn't even say baseball people. Old school baseball fans will say, well, we got this kid coming. And no offense, guys, if you're one of those that we can't give up our prospects. But if you're a manager nowadays, if you're Chip Hale, if you're in the front office, you're Dave Stewart, you can't go back to management and say, well, we got these guys 3 years and 4 years away. That's not going to fly in this day and age of instant gratification and capturing a marketplace. So you've got to develop talent, but you have to actually develop that talent much quicker than what we're used to seeing and actually have them here. Like Archie Bradley probably shouldn't have been up here.
Right.
Right. But he excited the fan base. He had some good outings, got smoked off the face, came back, was okay. Then we didn't see him for the rest of the season. I really believe, Paul, the day and age of saying we've got this shortstop who's the number one overall pick and he's 3 years away, and boy, is he going to be good. Owners aren't going to sit around for that anymore. And managers and general managers aren't going to be employed if they do that. It's just changed.
Yeah, you certainly want to, you know, I mean, I think the ideal situation is you're able to have a nice combination of both, you know,
sure,
of growing your own talent. And but as even Jerry Colangelo proved after he bought this team, you know, he made a decision a lot of people criticize. He brought in expensive, accomplished people because he knew he needed an audience to grow. And he wanted, you know, he also knew that if he tried to win as quickly as possible, that helps matters. And so, you know, you have to take risks, and you're right. I mean, it's a different era in baseball, and instant gratification, or at least, you know, gratification that doesn't take 12 years to develop is a sign of the times right now.
I'm curious on your end. Do you hear or believe that the Suns internally care that Jerry's back in the NBA? I mean, when Jerry reached out to Mike D'Antoni this last week, I just had to laugh, you know, that Mike is going to go show up on the 76ers sideline, and Jerry's going to bring the band back together. Is there a belief down at the paper, or you guys have back channel communications with the Suns that, you know, Jerry coming back is kind of a shot at them?
Well, I don't know if they're interpreting as a shot at them, but I know there's a lot of people in there that are kind of going, oh my God, you know, what's happening here? One, because there really hasn't been any communication with Jerry and you know, ownership over there since Sarver took over. And communication, I mean, by reaching out and asking his opinion, some guidance and things like that.
Even though he had a title, they never reached out.
Jerry told me that just a couple months ago when I was in Chicago. I was really surprised by that. And there are still a lot of people who work there who have great affection for Jerry, because people loved working for the most part for Jerry Colangelo. And so I'm sure internally there's frustration that's happening, and you know, they shouldn't interpret it as him trying to stick it to them, because he wasn't the one that initially contacted the NBA and said, hey, get me hooked up with the 76ers. That was the NBA reaching out to him. So, yeah, but I have to believe it's frustrating. And I think the D'Antoni thing is a great move. I mean, you know, when he got let go here, I know there was frustration with they'll never win with a title with a team that can't play defense, blah, blah, blah. But he did a lot of great things to produce exciting basketball here in Arizona, and he's a great basketball mind, and I think he'll be a great assist to that organization.
If he had an itch to scratch, Robert should have scratched it, but that's just me.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll let you go off that. Stay well. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
It's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. She joins us. On the other side, so ASU had the number one running back prospect in the nation, in the entire country, on campus this weekend. We'll talk about that and a few other things. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. This is going to be an interesting week in the Valley from this standpoint. Markieff Morris's deal, there's some with his contract. This is the week that if he's going to get moved, it's going to happen the next couple of days. And he had a DNP on Sunday, did not play, which is fine by me, and they won without him. I can't believe that we're sitting here still going through this. I can't believe that anybody over at the Suns had this idea that this is all going to go well and let's not move him this summer after he got rid of his brother. I just can't. Sometimes there's things in sports, guys, that you look at and say, man, if I'm in a position of a front office, I could see this coming from miles and miles away, that this wasn't going to end well, and that a player will say all the right things, and it's the first year of a contract that they signed him to. And for them to think that this was going to go right and he's getting a DNP in December and playing limited minutes and his body manners, I don't care what he looked like at the end of the Bulls game. I had some people said, well, didn't you see him at the end of the – I did see him at the end of the Bulls game. He jumped off the bench. He was the first guy out there. I don't care about that. That's one time. It's 24-7 with this load. And so anybody who's going to try to convince me that they're going to be a better team by having him here, no, get him out of here. And this is supposed by the 15th, he's going to be gone. I think he's going to be gone by tomorrow. I hope he's gone by tomorrow. I hoped he was gone by August 15th. So that's on my mind. Kareem Walker, is that a name that Arizona State fans are going to want to remember for the next 4 years or 3 years? I don't know, but I know this. Kareem Walker is rated the number one running back prospect in the nation. And Kareem Walker was on campus at Arizona State. It's the second time he's visited the ASU campus. This was his official visit over the weekend. He showed up and he was there. And they convinced this kid to come out from Wayne, New Jersey. Come out from New Jersey, the number one running back prospect in the nation. Look at us. We're Arizona State. You need to come here. He plays at DePaul Catholic High. He had 4,563 yards and 57 touchdowns through four seasons on varsity. Never played anything else than varsity. It's Auburn, Alabama, Florida State, Michigan, ASU are his final five. And we'll find out on Thursday. Now, most people are saying that it's going to be, and when I say most people, these are recruiting analysts who get paid. It's like our Jason Jewell, except these are people at Michigan and other places. And some of these places are chasing clicks. Some of them are actually on to what's happening. I see that in recruiting. This kid could come here, no shot of him, but we're going to get, I don't know, 25,000 page views off of something that's never going to happen. I don't think that's the case here with this kid. The fact that he's come out twice, and I don't know what his major is. I haven't talked to him about that stuff. That's got to be part of it. If his major is just playing football and nothing else, I don't think in this day and age you can take those sort of risks over and over and over, unless number one running back in the nation. Of course, we don't care if he's going to major in interdisciplinary studies. Hey, at least he's going to major in something, right? We've seen that happen where guys have come in and...
Yeah, my favorite is when you're watching a game and the kid's like a junior or senior, and it's either his major is undeclared or general studies.
General studies.
General studies is basically the classes you take when you're a freshman and maybe the beginning of your sophomore season.
I am in math 101 again, and I'm playing football. I am in math 101 for the third time, and I'm on the football team. So, no, I agree with you on that. But I think, Eric, when it comes to recruiting and Todd, Todd is not afraid to go big game hunting.
Yeah, and he should. It's great that ASU is even in this kid's final five. It says a lot for where the program is. I mean, this is, like you said, Brad, this isn't just another running back. The so-called experts say this is the top-rated running back in the country.
So he comes down to the final five. I think if you're Arizona State, when they chase Josh Dobbs, who goes by Joshua, Tennessee, and he pulled back, a kid was in Atlanta, and it was the first year Todd was here. So he and Mike are chasing guys. Norvell are chasing guys that are on the national radar screen. And I think that the fact that he's still chasing them and they're still coming out here. Yeah, Mike Norvell is gone. But it didn't take away from what the other coaches have done over there. And so we'll see on this one. Thursday is the day he's supposed to announce.
Yeah, we will see. Sometimes in recruiting, you know, you're going to get the Joshua Dobbs who you lose at the last minute. And sometimes you're going to get the Kalen Balazs, which fall in your lap at the very, very last minute.
Point.
That's just the way it goes.
That's dead on, flat right. So Kyle Allen is not going to Houston, huh? What are you hearing on that one?
I'm hearing that the reports of him meeting with Houston yesterday, the connection there is Tom Herman was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State.
Right.
And Kyle was recruited by Ohio State after his high school career here in Phoenix before deciding at A&M. But I'm just hearing that don't believe everything
he's not going to ASU,
see
by the
or
way.
Hear when
Any
it comes
people-
to him and the University of Houston. And I can't see him he's going to ASU either. So.
Could you see him going to Memphis for Mike Norvell?
No. He needs to go to a big school. I'm not Kyle Allen. I don't know everything that's going on, but like we talked about for the show, he's proven he can play at the highest level.
It's not Connor Brewer leaving Texas and going to Arizona. It's
not
a slight on Connor. It's just a fact. He went from Texas to Arizona to NAU to Virginia.
Yep.
And it didn't work out.
Yeah, Kyle Allen is not an unknown. Every coach in America knows who Kyle Allen is, knows he can play. And I'm sure the family is just going to take a couple weeks. I mean, he's probably going to enroll in a school next month and get started. But for him, since he's a three to play two, he's going to want to go to a situation where there's a junior in place now that's going to be a senior, and he can just kind of step in.
Yeah, decide in. Go do classes.
Yep.
No, I get it.
Redshirt next year and then step in 2017.
All right. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now at sports360AZ.com. We invite you to go check that out. Thanks for being with us. I'm Brad Sussmat.